You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
For maximum customer engagement and retention, choose CleverTap. CleverTap is a leading customer engagement and retention platform that helps digital brands maximize lifetime value. Over 8,000 apps around the world, including Vodafone, Star, and Sony, trust CleverTap to improve user engagement, boost retention, and fuel long-term revenue growth. Learn more at clevertap.com. That's clevertap.com.
Are you looking for the best in WordPress speed, security, and scalability? WP Engine is a digital experience platform for WordPress, powering digital experiences for large brands around the world. With easy-to-use site management tools and powerful do-it-your-way development features, WP Engine gives you the flexibility to build it your way. Improve your SEO and conversion rates with a faster site on WP Engine. Learn more on WPEngine.com.
Welcome to Webcology. Webcology is the show that takes you into the deepest and darkest ends of the ecosystem on the internet. Our guides will take you on a journey into web marketing and bring you the experts and the information so that you can further explore the web marketing world. Now, here are the hosts of Webcology, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Everyone, welcome to Webcology on devremar.fm. It is the 4th of November, 2021. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media and Dave Davies from Beanstalk Internet Marketing. And I don't know what it's like out there, Dave, but it's finally happened here. It's later than usual, but it's gone below zero at night. Frost is on the ground. Winter is coming. Really bad Christmas music is just waiting for Thanksgiving to end, and Black Friday approaches faster than you want it to be. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I mean, I live, right? So it's warmer here than there. But I had the sad news last night that I discovered. And although the sad news starts today, and we were talking about the holidays and the holidays approaching, and I found out last night that today the holiday drinks at Starbucks roll out, and for some crazy reason they won't have the eggnog latte. So I'm disappointed, but at the same time I always prefer them from the smaller coffee shops anyway, because they just tasted better. So there we are.
And you thought working online made you like immune to like supply chain problems. There you
that's
go.
Not a supply chain problem. I would have seen a shortage of eggnog.
Indeed. Happy almost Christmas, but more importantly, happy approaching Black Friday.
And Diwali starts today. So
absolutely.
A big happy, I don't know if Festival of Lights is the right way to word that, but that's how I have it in my head. But I know that also is referred to Hanukkah. So that might be what's just confusing me, because there are lights involved with both. But it's a big day.
Shauna's pulling me out back for the small fireworks display tonight. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, be great.
Okay. Yeah.
But a lot has happened, and a lot is happening right now in search news.
A lot is happening right now. As we speak, the aptly named November spam update is, it sounds like something Les Nessman would report on, the November spam update. An update targeting content that doesn't follow the Google guidelines, because that's the definition of spam, is rolling out today. And Google, being the engineers they are, have aptly named it the November spam update. So if you've published stuff that is outside of the Google guidelines, because that's what they're targeting, apparently, which I thought it's wide. Like, when asked what defines spam, Danny Sullivan said stuff that falls outside the Google guidelines. I just can't get over how wide that is. That's what Google is targeting. And that starts today. It's supposed to roll out for about a week. You get, I don't know, jacked up by Google on your way to the bank, that's probably why.
Yeah. And I did send, like, I've got some messages out to a few clients, basically going, there's going to be a bit of volatility, but don't worry, at the end, like, you're fine, right? Because we do white hat, right? So I'm like, okay, you're going to be fine, but there will be some volatility. And one of the areas, and why I like to warn people about that volatility, is I suspect that some clients might go from, say, position 17 for a query, right? I mean, I wish they were, you know, top three for every query, but they're not, not all of them. You know, you might go from 17 up to first page and then down, right, through these fluctuations. That's why they roll out. So, you know, where it's the sites ahead of you being impacted. So I always like to warn people, like, let's catch up in a week. We'll see where we are, and you should be ahead, or none of you are spamming, right? But yeah, if some of you are spamming, then we'll do
more importantly, if your competitors were spamming,
yeah,
they're likely to lose position, which means you're possibly going to gain position. Doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work that way. Even if you're in position 17 and the position 4 placement falls out of place, doesn't mean that you move up to 16 necessarily.
Yeah.
Google might find something to throw in there, might even find something to throw into the top 10 that looks more relevant to whatever query constructed that entire set of search results in the first place. But if you suddenly vanish and reappear later, that doesn't mean that Google thinks your content spam or that your SEO let you stray outside of Google's guidelines. Just means you got caught in the sorting process, but you're back again. So in the whole Googleverse, no harm, no foul.
Right.
Something like that.
Yeah, it's a good way of wording it.
Okay. So anyway, if you see bounciness, it's because Google is doing the November spam update. I really wish we could report on this story all month long, just so I could say November spam update all month long. So I love this one. Lily Ray was asking John Mueller a question via Twitter the other day, and now she's like, "What's the cutoff point? What's the level or the measure when you have to apply the rating equals adult, meta name equals rating, content equals adult tag?" This is a tag that helps Google figure out what should fall into and outside of safe search when people adjust the safe search filter on their own browser. And so the answer that both John Mueller and Danny Sullivan gave was great. And it basically sums up to, Google doesn't necessarily know what smut is, but it knows smut when it sees it. Google has no objective measure of what adultness is. That was the answer. So they do say, like, if it's an explicit picture, and I mean, you know, you can judge for yourself. If it's like a nudie pic, that's a gratuitous nudie pic, it's probably adult. Mm-hmm. But again, I just love that we don't necessarily know what smut is, but we know it when we see it. I love that attitude.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? I kind of get it, because it is something where, you know, you think of you, or you think of me, or you think of anybody in our listening audience. It's like, how would I define it? Where are the thresholds in this or that? Or what? Put it on a screen, though, I'll tell you whether it is or not. Well, but could I enunciate exactly what would make something cross that line?
Of course, the people who decide this stuff for Google are also the fact checkers at Facebook. Okay, you ever had, all of us have had this problem. It's frustrating as hell, especially if you're 3 weeks into the engagement and you need to get into Google Search Console, but you can't because it hasn't been verified properly, or, you know, you haven't been authorized. Google often gives you like two or three methods to get in. You can, you know, have the little file that you plant at the root of the server, or the little snippet that you put into the head of the code. And sometimes you can do that and sometimes you can't. Mm-hmm. But they've never allowed you to call a live person and plead your case. Hey, Bob, I need in. Let me in. I got to see this. I need those numbers, Bob. Google's now allowing to call for property verification.
Which is interesting.
Would that be helpful?
I'm wondering how long this is going to last. And here's why I say that. Because I can just see that people are going to have one phone number. One phone number for all their stuff. I don't know exactly how the system works, and if it's automated, that'll be a totally different thing, right? Like whether when you get through. But I'm picturing a world where people come up with other issues and only have one number that they know. So
to this day, I have at least, I don't know, probably about a dozen stray access to Google Search Console or Google Analytics or Bing Webmaster Tools accounts that, like, from old clients. So I really shouldn't be able to look at their stats, but I do every once in a while anyway. Often with a mix of shat and frozen. But I could just, people don't keep track of who is allowed in and not allowed into their analytics and into their records. I know this for a fact because I have so many that I'm still allowed into for no reason whatsoever. I should not be able to see your data, but thank you very much. It helps a lot. It really does.
Oh, I know.
I'm sure you do. So could you imagine how many, like you said, it's all tied to one phone number. How many, how many fakes are going to be first off? Like why not? Why not try to fake your way into your competitor's account? And two, how many you're going to be tagged with, like, 2 or 3 years from now? It's going to be unending. But only in the U.S. They're just trying it out now to see if it actually works or not. This being a Google program, they could stop doing it next week just for the heck of it.
Yeah, give it a try. And you know what? Speaking of which, and on a completely related topic, Google My Business. This is frustrating to me, but for a very peculiar reason. Google My Business is changing their name. So for folks in the listening audience, you'll no longer, as of today, be calling it Google My Business. It is now known as Google Business Profile.
Jesus, why don't they just call it Google Local? For God's sake. Anyway, Google Business Profile. Okay.
Circling back. And my frustration with this, like, it's a name. I understand why. Like, it's just more. I don't really understand why, actually. Like,
no,
it
doesn't
really make sense. But I mean, I get that they're in their heads. This makes sense in semantics. But I'm like, great. Just like AdWords was, there's now a word that I'm going to use like consistently for the next 6 months wrong, and then just periodically drop it in like 5 years from now. I'll call it the wrong thing and sound like an idiot, especially the people who weren't even around 5 years earlier. Right? And we're like going, what are you even talking about? Like, what happened if you said AdWords today to somebody newer into the industry?
I mean, you know why they're doing this, eh? Like, I understand this. This is the linguistic equivalent of the big red button. You want the user to pay attention or to commit an action on a page. You give them a big red button to pound on, and they will pound on that big red button because they're humans, and that's what humans do.
Right.
This is the Google Business Profile. that kind of says to me, fill this out, or Google doesn't know anything about your business and you're going to be left, like, you know, sort of swinging in the wind there. So fill this out, or like Google, that sounds like an or else statement. Google My Business sounds something very friendly, you know, like something a nice little leprechaun is delivering on a platter full of gold. But Google Business Profile, that's something your accountant's brought to you.
Well, I mean, you do bring up a very, very interesting and I think very, very valid point. And I hadn't considered this, and it's something that maybe we all should be thinking about when we're even just looking at the our own naming conventions and things like that is Google Business Profile. It's funny because I almost have the opposite sort of take on this than you do, like in how it's treated, because I view Google My Business and go, okay, well, that I don't know if that applies to me. That's like a business manager thing. And I have a Facebook profile. I have a Twitter profile. I have profiles all over the place. It's a word I'm very, very comfortable with. I know exactly what to expect there. Cool. And at the end of the day, like, I might get annoyed by this, and I will. And I apologize in advance to my listeners. I will call it the wrong thing for the next few months. I'm sure I will try not to, but I will do it anyway. You know, because we've been calling it one thing for years. But at the same time, you and me and most of our listeners are not who's being targeted here. They're not. We already drank the Kool-Aid. We're in there. I have, like, I don't even know how many properties and various business profile pages, right? Like with Search Console, right? Like, it's just one of those things that they collect. Actually, with this one, normally I move them out. But, you know, nonetheless, I'm not that person that they need to worry about. I don't care what they name it. They could call it Alphabet Soup, and I would still jump in there and make sure all the sites that I care about are in there managed properly. We don't matter from that context. Small business owners who don't have an SEO, who do need to be in matter.
Then this is confusing.
Yeah. But if they've never used, because I think the people they're trying to get in front of have probably never used Google My Business or have heard of it as a thing, but haven't really done it. You know, if all of a sudden they start seeing Google Business Profile, in my mind, the semantic of that would be, oh, I have a business, I should fill out my profile. It's like your page on LinkedIn, right?
Although I still maintain the only correct name for this whole program is Google Local. Like, maybe it's because I'm old or something, but this isn't a business directory. When you enter information into the tool formerly known as Google My Business, now Google Business Profile, you're basically filling in your local search reference and all the information Google has about your business. You could be a transnational business with several branch headquarters, several branch offices, but each of those offices will have their own Google My Business listing underneath your main listing.
Yeah.
So it's, they'll all come up in local search when somebody does this, or when someone does a mobile search with the exact right kind of keywords, it'll trigger Google Business Profile. Is it again? Like, I guess you need a scorecard to keep up. It's a name, but I still think Google Local is the right way to describe it.
Well, you know, I mean, we say I do get why they wouldn't go that route, because they do want multinationals that might not have like, I'm not referring to multinationals like McDonald's, where, yes, they would want them all in there, but multinationals like Google, right? Where it's like, they don't really care about their offices, but they need an entity status, right? And so they would want all large businesses, SaaS companies, hosting companies. They might not care. They might just have service areas, because they're like, I don't care that people know that I'm here. They just...
Here's the real question. What else has changed? I mean, they changed the name, but is there new fields? Are there new features? Is it going to allow me to promote businesses in new and improved ways?
They have announced some new features. So yes, they'll be allowing for the claim and verification, right, through directly through Google search and maps, right? Like making it nice, easy breezy. Call history is launching in the US and Canada. So, hey, we're actually included in that one. Messaging can be done directly through Google search is one of their features, and Red Receipts, which I think had launched in my memory already, but it can be controlled in Google search and maps. So a few new features, none of which I think really drive the name change, but I do think it's more an ecosystem change. They're just trying to make it more of a thing. Like you think of, like, I don't know, Google Business Profile, like going outside even of just the specific, do I think this would like lure people in more? Is it a more friendly name or whatever? I think the word profile allows for much more flexibility in things like that, like messaging. Oh, it's where I go for messaging. Well, I have a Facebook profile and I also do a lot of messaging, right? Like it just naturally, I think, allows for a lot more stuff. I'm betting though that within a few years, you know what, we'll probably be doing a podcast. We can reflect back on this one then. I have a feeling we'll see another name change come to this one, because I don't think they hit the nail on the head with this one. I can't think of a better thing for them, but that's not my job.
And I'll still be calling it Google Local. Guarantee it.
Maybe Google Places, you know, you could go back.
My God. Yeah. Okay. So, let's see, penguins or guest posts? So you ever wonder how Google knows if it's your post or a guest post or somebody else's post on your blog?
Just look, if there's a bunch of other links to Wikipedia, then it's probably...
There's a whole bunch of signals they look at, and where links go is one of them. If the quality of links and citations is something they look at, level of language, topic is, if you normally write about search and somebody is coming in and writing about social, chances are it's not you doing the writing. Mm-hmm. And anchor text, where is the bio link going, is something that Google's looking at. The important thing about the story wasn't as much what Google does to detect guest posts, but that Google's hammering on the concept of guest posting again. That's when I saw it. That was the first thing I thought is, oh, why are they talking about this again?
Right. I don't know. Maybe because they have an update attacking spam rolling out. I don't know.
There you go. And people are asking questions about it. So... guest posting, and this one still really bothers me, eh? Because I think it's totally cool if I was to write a series of posts over on your blog. I think that's that. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah, I think, and you know, it's one of those problematic areas where I don't think they're referring to, if I went, hey Jim, I trust your opinion on SEO. Would you like to write a guest post for us? That'd be great. And of course, I'm going to link back to your site because I'm going to go about the author.
Because you're polite.
Because I'm polite. And that's just what you do. I mean, yes, I know that's technically a violation, but I think if it was limited to that, I don't think they would care. What I don't think they like is the 18 emails that you or I both get every day, and so does everybody in the listening audience, going, here's my list of domains.
Yeah. But incidentally, that's the equivalent of the jackasses driving down the street yelling at girls out of the car window. It must work 1 out of 1,000 times, or they wouldn't keep doing it.
And that's all it needs to work, right? Like, especially if you've got an automated system firing off those emails, how often does it need to work?
Google is definitely going after the people who do this at scale. I wish they had better ways of phrasing or articulating what their actual targets were, because I don't know. I've always felt the weird in my stomach about them going after quote unquote guest posts. I thought that stifled a lot of creativity. And for a while, I guess like 3 years now, for the kind of posts that Dave and I were just talking about a second ago, that wouldn't really matter. I mean, the link back wouldn't really matter wouldn't really matter either, even if Google did think it was an egregious guest post trying to game their system, because Google, as far as we understood it, would have just ignored the link. That's how they announced Penguin and what they told us would what Penguin would do at the beginning of it. And for the most part, apparently, Penguin still does. But we learned this week that at scale, penguins can be pretty scary. So a couple of penguins, not so bad. 5 million penguins, terrifying. Penguin will mostly ignore links it doesn't like. It devalues them, but it doesn't demote the page or the site around them. It just, you know, poof, they don't have any value. It doesn't count. But the links can give Google an idea of how trustworthy overall the entire domain is. And if it sees a continued pattern of bogus links or manipulation or crappy links that it would otherwise devalue, not only will it devalue those links, it might take the actual step of penalizing or demoting the entire website for a trustiness issue.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine.
That absolutely makes sense to me. Like, it's funny. It's one of those, like, they've never said it, but when they started talking about, like, well, we're focused mostly on, like, devaluing the links that we don't like. And this was like a couple of years back, I think.
Yeah,
I remember Gary Ives talking about it, but
that's been their line all along.
It has. There was always something that just seemed fundamentally wrong about that. Like in my head, it didn't make sense. That was the way they would go on a scale, like, because it basically just lets, like, hardcore spammers kick at tires and just go, we're going to try 5,000 different black hat tactics and one or two of them won't be pick upable yet. Right. So just flood in and the two that don't get picked up will cast their value and raise the site. The other, large percentage will get, you know, just filtered out and it won't impact. Like, so, like, I know that's an extreme example, but it made it inherently wrong what they were saying. But I do think that it's reducing that threshold, right? Like, you remember, like, we've both been doing this long enough, even going back 5, 6, 7 years, we were seeing a lot more false positives than I'm hearing about now. Like, a lot more sites getting, like, tripped up. Heck, I'd be pulled in to do audits on why they got manual penalties, and it would be like 3, 4, 5% of their backlink profiles.
Yep.
Right. And a lot of those would just be like, this one's even in the gray zone for me, right? Like, I'm going to flood it out, but it's like, I don't know. That was like, it was one of the things that would have been a fine directory 5 years earlier, and they probably got that listing 5 years earlier. And just now Google's deciding, no, Joe Ant sucks. Like, well, that's just one I remember seeing in there. And I'm like,
I remember inspecting those ones. I used to hate doing that because before you could reject the link, you actually had to go back and say, okay, is it in the right category? Is it in the, you know, are they trying to, at least, I can understand why they stemmed it this way. Just trying to decide why a webmaster would have laid this link. Yeah. Or why you would, or why somebody else would have, like, got them into this this directory. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it made sense, but those are always the harder ones to inspect because, you know, you just want to. If it had a dot, I always figured if it had a dot RU, just reject it. That's guaranteed. And if it was off topic, I would that would go into my probably reject file.
Yeah.
And you're just doing this by inspecting domain names, which is a piss poor way to inspect links, but had that at scale, right?
Right.
You use Majestic or something, but even so, you got to inspect the list they give you.
Well, indeed. And I remember, you know, I'd run a URL profiler would be the one that I'd use, right? And it would, like, scrape all the link, find out which ones were there, tell me, okay, how many outbound links are on this page, right? Like, all the metrics that you're talking about too. And, like, sort of like, okay, but I've got, you know, like, really strong site. I've got like 180,000 links to get through here, right? Like,
yeah.
Okay, buckle up, because, like, you're never going to be perfect. You know, you're throwing out some babies with some bath water there, because you just need to get the job done. And the client wants you to do that too. Go, like, you can't go in here like a sniper, right? Like, you just need to, like, cut off limbs left, right, and center and just get this done, because we can't go back onto the road to recovery until we've got this manual action lifted. So,
yeah.
Back to the story that we're talking about today. what we're hearing here is it does make sense that they would go, the majority of your profile, like, come on, we know what you're doing. Right? Like, yeah, like I'm absolutely not surprised. I think if there's like bits of your profile, there's bits of Google's profile that look spammy, right? Like, don't worry about it. It's going to happen. Don't obsess. There's a reason why they've said, don't go poring over disavowing everything unless you're doing something bad. Like, so they're probably right there. Well, I would say most certainly they're right there.
So naturally, the first thing though that the Reddit community gets onto, I saw the story at Reddit first at the in one of the SEO forums of Reddit, and naturally, the first thing that community goes on is, oh, okay, so I can send a whole bunch of really craptastic links over to my competitor and do some negative SEO.
Yeah.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
To which the response was, what if someone, if Gary or John Mueller was asked, what if someone does this to me? His response was, use the disavow file.
Right. And you do need to watch that. And I wish, I understand why they can't, but I wish they would put in a detection sort of notification system into Search Console, right? Because they're constantly monitoring backlinks and go, like, there's an artificial spike in your backlink profile. Like, I get that they kind of can't, because that would also be used by, like every black hat on the planet would be going, okay, let's get like 30 different sites and like test different things on each one of them and find out where that threshold, that alert system is, and just always keep it under that. Like, I understand why they can't, but it would be nice because it would let people get alerted to the fact that,
yeah, you want to give,
okay, there are thresholds. Now, it might be something if I ran like a tool like Majestic or Ahrefs or SEMrush or something like that, going, as a free service, you can sign up for this alert. And if we see a spike in what we deem to be negative, we'll just give you an alert. We're not giving you access to all that data, but we will send you an alert and like a preliminary report, not enough to build your disavow file off of, but enough to see what we're looking at, just as a lead gen thing, because I can think of a lot of people that would sign up for that and go look for spikes.
Yeah. The first thing competitive SEO would do, give their competitors a really crappy Thanksgiving weekend by giving them spike reports to deal with.
Yeah, okay. But you know what? Better that than the manual action that might follow, you know, a month later.
It's true. I'm always wary giving advice that says use the disavow file.
Yeah.
Not because of the throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I had one client where I clearly gave them an Excel file that had, you know, the tabs at the bottom of Excel, you can have a bunch of different Excel sheets in the same file. Mm-hmm. The very first one said, disavow me. The next one said, all your links. The third one was the good links. So bad links, all links, good links. What do you think he disavowed? All of them. He went to all, he disavowed all. I can't stand disavows. They scare me.
Yeah. 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 No, if you can avoid them, obviously do. One of the things that I've also found handy is, like, often in these spikes, you'll see a start point. So in a tool like Majestic or Ahrefs or those, you can go all the links discovered after. And it's like, okay, let's just filter out everything from before that spike. Like, let's just get rid of that so we can't accidentally include that in anything. And then just look at everything from after or during a specific spike and go, okay, let's now just look at those ones. It not only makes the list smaller, but it protects you from disavowing accidentally something from before, which wasn't your concern point if you're worried about, like, a competitor negative attack or something like that. But
anyway, beware Google Penguin if you're seriously screwing around. If you're just sort of kind of screwing around, it doesn't really care. But right. If you're really screwing around, Penguin will get you. Okay, something we reported on last week. Obviously, we really disturbed some people at WordPress with what we were reporting last week. Eh?
Yeah.
WordPress has calling its team managers together. It's called its plugin makers together. Anyone who's involved with making stuff for WordPress has been called on the carpet, had a come to Jesus meeting. And WordPress knows it's losing its rep and really, 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 really wants to turn the ship around and wants to do it now. So I've read several reports of just, like, hammer and tong meetings in the WordPress world. Things might change fairly quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it'll be, I understand for WordPress that it would be hard, and something I think is almost necessary. Who knows if it'll happen, because part of it is just like this, like, open sourcey kind of thing that people like about it. But one of the things that I think would be handy for WordPress to have as, like, a badge is on themes and on plugins, like, basically, and they'd have to charge a fee for it, like a manual review, not to judge, is this the fastest thing on the web? Because different designs are going to be different, but is this as fast as it can possibly be to accomplish what it's doing, right? Like, so going into plugins, going into themes, and going on core web vitals and on user-based experience, is this as fast as it can possibly be? Is it only loading in the styles that it needs, or is it loading in everything for everything that this theme could be? Mm-hmm. Right? Is it just loading in, you know, is it a plugin for a feature you only use in the admin, but is it loading scripts into the front end just because they were lazy and it's just loading stuff, right?
Like, or it becomes some big font pack, you know, like, you got the 32 fonts, you're using one of them.
Right. Exactly. Like, does it consider those sorts of things? Charge a bit of a fee for it, but then they get a badge. You know what you and I would be doing? Like, I would probably just be ruling out anything that didn't have that if there was an alternative that did.
I would pay for that, to be honest. Yeah. Now, again, Core Web Vitals isn't everything, the end all be all, but it's important. User experience. How to say this? Just really careful on saying this exactly right. Google cares about user experience more than it cares about what it calls Core Web Vitals, but Core Web Vitals are the metrics that measure user experience. You can have a mixture of results in Core Web Vitals, good, bad, like, you don't want to be tripping into the needs improvement or bad area, but Google's judging the overall user experience, including page speed, and ease of use, and no annoying interstitials, and a bunch of other factors, along with Core Web Vitals. But Core Web Vitals are measurable, and there are plateaus to which you can reach to improve page speed, improve the user experience. And they're measurable ones. Like, Google to say, like, we have a quantifiable number. It's not like SMUT, but it's because we don't know what smut is, but we do. But they do know. They do know. They don't know what you what a great user experience is, but they know how to measure this, this, and this aspect of user experience. Mm-hmm. That's how I would. That's I think the right way to describe it. But Core Web Vitals are not the end all be all. They're not the most important thing, but they definitely influence how Google feels about the experience a user would have on your page.
Well, indeed. And I mean, I can imagine, like, if they were doing a paid service like this, you know, having a backend system that just charted, you know, here's all the plugins that are existing on this WordPress install, this WordPress install, this WordPress install, and then pulling through the API, the lab data, so that they could get a feel for the real impact in the field of these plugins and going, oh, okay, this is how it differs from the Core Web Vitals, because usually they're better, right? Like usually from the sites that I've looked at anyway, I usually see that, okay, the lab data is usually more favorable than Google's sort of, the field data is usually better than the lab data, like a little more favorable. Basically, sites are faster than Google thinks in their lab. You know, but you could actually connect that through API if you were doing a paid service, because this would be a lot of overhead for WordPress. But if you really wanted to tackle it and go, okay, and we need these sites, you know, when we're looking at all of the plugin, this plugin as it exists in all these different installs around the web, it seems to fare pretty well versus ones that have the same sort of install demographics, but don't have this plugin, that sort of thing. Like it obviously doesn't impact it that much. You could do some interesting analysis from that. If you were WordPress, and again, if you were charging these plugin manufacturers, it would limit who would be able to get it, because it would have to be paid, like, you know, which would cause people to complain, but you know, there you are. I would pay for that added functionality.
Makes sense. And then, you know, there's a number of things I think that WordPress could insist be built into or be built to be compatible with around their platform that will speed things up or give a better user experience or make them a more appealing mousetrap than, say, Wix, Squarespace, or any of the other content management competitors out there. It's cool to see them react like this. So I think it might actually be a shout out to Morty over at Wix. But dude, you're not only are you lighting a fire under Wix, but I think you're lighting a fire under your competitors as well.
Yeah, which is obviously great. And hopefully this doesn't come to bite them in the butt, because you and I remember the wonderful days of Ask.
Indeed, they were
a wonderful engine with a lot of innovation, and they launched some great features that Google then took yeah. and deployed into their own engine and made Ask redundant.
That's what this is reminding me of, the search engine wars at that time. That's right. Exactly what this whole thing is reminding me of. I think that's probably why I'm so amused by all this.
It's great. And I mean, there's different elements that work for different sort of people, right? Which makes it a little bit different because for the most part, I think search results generally, if I'm looking for blue widgets, I'm looking for blue widgets. Right? Like I'm looking for the same thing as somebody else might. Whereas when you're looking at CMS, I think a lot of that's like, okay, how do I want the layout? What is my technical prowess? How customizable do I want? Like, there's actually a few more variables I think that kick in there. You know, otherwise everybody would just go, oh, I just want the fastest thing, and off the Duda you would go, right? Like that would be that, right? The end of that decision if you only had one concern. So anyway, but I like you, I'm really interested to see like how this is playing out. And I thought once upon a time, and maybe this will happen to Google. I thought if we'd gone back a few years, this is just WordPress is like there, nothing will slow them down. They will just, they've been rolling over people on they go, but we're starting to see some real challengers. I did not predict that Wix would be one of them though, but here we are.
Yep. I'm like, you know what? I think it's in a weird way. I didn't either. I didn't think it would, but I'm almost kicking myself for not thinking they would be, because of course they would be. If they stick around long enough, they have to innovate. If they don't, they're going to get fried. That's just the way it works in this world.
Yeah.
Okay. So I wanted the story about WordPress trying to catch up with his rivals to sort of be the segue into this one, which I think is a really cool story. Google is updating PageSpeed Insights.
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. It's been forever. I didn't know this until today, but the version of PageSpeed Insights that we've been using is 10 years old.
I didn't know that either.
Like no one's updated the tool. It's worked just fine for the last decade, but websites do a lot more and Google's demanding a lot more of websites. And so there's updates coming to PageSpeed Insights. I'm really pleased about this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering what it will lend, you know, as far as technically, will they be able to start showing us additional stuff? But from my understanding, and who knows if that's even kind of equates to reality, but from my understanding, most of the initial changes we'll be seeing are predominantly more communication clarification. it's more creating a clearer separation, as I was talking earlier, between their field and their lab data and making it more obvious. And changing more visual elements rather than changing so much of what the actual data will be presented with is. But, I've seen some sort of screenshots, as I'm sure have you as well, over on Search Engine Journal, Matt Southern's piece over there, which was reminding me I need to mention Barry Schwartz in one of his articles coming up. But for now, it's Matt Southern. I'm excited, and I was almost more interested to find out that the code powering was a decade old.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah. There's going to be some additions to it, which is really cool. I'm looking at the same article in Search Engine Journal that Matt Southern wrote. Google's going to give us a lot more information on various aspects of the page. It's going to give us more information on the data itself and how it found the data. It's going to take Core Web Vitals and give it its own section on the page with its own icon at the top of the tabs. It's going to add an expanded view of any piece of field data to give you a more, you know, granular details on an issue or a solution. It is going to give you information on the data collection period, visit durations, the devices used to visit the site, which is actually kind of cool. In some cases, I'm still obsessing on desktop or mobile version visiting, so especially on B2B clients. But talking about sample size in data collection and the versions of Chrome. Chrome versions used to look at the data.
Now, Chrome, isn't that a fascinating one?
I think so.
Yeah. I'm just like, oh, we'll actually get to see how things are improving with just Chrome versions.
So, doesn't say when the modernization is going to take place, but it's coming.
Yeah, it does. They did note it'll be later this year. So we at least know in the next 2 months. I know I'd read that somewhere in there that it's coming at some point this year. So, we'll be, it's about a quarter way through the piece with the update rolling out later this year is how it's worded. So, it's exciting, interesting. Something just for clarification for our listening audience, when we're saying that the code behind it is 10 years old, we're not saying that the code that they're using on the backside of that to collect the Core Web Vitals data, for example, is a decade old. they're collecting stuff they weren't even measuring 10 years ago. So the data feeding into PageSpeed Insights would have been in most, if not all cases, more current than that. But the code actually powering that page was a decade old. So
there you go. Okay, we got time for a couple more stories. There was one in the PPC world that you put here. Performance Max campaign. Now, why did that? I just completely don't understand.
Okay. There is a new campaign type. I had the opportunity to beta test it, which was nice. And it's called Performance Max. What it does, I mean, it does different. Like, there's like all their campaigns, there's a bunch of different things that you can do with it. In a nutshell, what I found is I ran it on a couple different campaign types. And what I found was it performed generally pretty well, like from a CPA. We know this is a sort of a like lead gen scenario. So from a CPA standpoint, it did pretty well. Like most googly things these days, it operated in much more of a black box than I liked. It didn't tell you a lot about what was going on in things. At the same time, the CPAs it produced were good. Basically, to create these types of campaigns, and I do recommend people to try them out if you have some budget to go, let's see how this goes. You know, spend few hundred dollars or something like that. And I recommend before the holidays, because you might want to use this during the holidays. But what it's built to do is go across all of their networks. We're talking everything from Discover to Gmail to like anywhere that Google drops stuff, it will go in there. And you don't get to go, hey, here's where I want you to go. No, this is just, it's Performance Max. This is what it does. And you're putting in all sorts of different description or headline lengths, descriptions, description lengths, images, videos. Like, you're just dropping in a whole bunch of different assets and going, go.
So Google does the arrangement. Google does the layout.
Google does everything from there. It'll arrange it on the page however it should be. It's much more like the responsive search and response. Well, it's closest to responsive display ads, but with just much broader targeting capabilities. So it seemed to do quite well. Now, you can pick your locations and things like that. Like, you can fine tune certain things, but you can't fine tune as much as, say, you could with other campaign types, where you can't get as granular on your ages and things like that that I would like to with some campaign or with some account types. But it was very, very interesting and revealing about what they're doing. And the way it works fundamentally is that they're looking at all the touch points on the sort of chain and going, we're not going to favor one or the other without data. It may take a touch point on search, then a touch point on display, then a touch point in somebody's like email. And it might take those three to produce a conversion. And so it'll start favoring those combinations and things and testing there. It's a really, really interesting one. It just opened up a couple days ago for everybody. So I do recommend, as I say, give it a test. It is interesting. I had it quite successful in one and not in another. I won't be running it in another. It's like, actually, for the same client, I was running just two different campaign types, so I can't get into great detail, but just to go, they were actually quite similar and it worked great in one, didn't in another, but they were similar products. So
Is Google mindful of your spend? Is it spending money like a drunk sailor?
Oh, it is. Well, I mean, you don't like anything except that I've opened the portal to, like, you can just drop this ad anywhere. It'll spend as much as you give them.
But how will it spend it? You know, will it spend it at the appropriate times? Will it parcel it out throughout a day? Can you dictate that?
You can't dictate it, but it did perform in the one. It didn't in another. But now in the other, I only gave it a month. And it didn't do horribly. I've run worse campaigns, like myself, out of like heavily like I've done worse than it did, but I've also done better than it did. With less time. But on the one that it did, it really seemed to take like about a week to 2 weeks to really understand what it was meaning to do. Now, I put a big budget with a large sort of segment. I went this entire country. And here's, you know, hundreds of dollars a day to do that with. And it figured itself out pretty fast and then performed very, very well. towards my acquisition that I was telling it to. I can't go into that black box and now see what time of day were you using. And so like, it's not letting me see that granular. I can pull that into third party tools and I have, but it gets pretty gray. Like I don't get the context. You just can't pull out the context that you would need to make any real actionable decisions to go, ah, well, that's what I'll do over on the display network. So clearly they're just trying to go, we can do better than you, but we don't want to show you what we're doing because we don't want you to try and do it yourselves, probably because we could do better if we had the data that they're using.
That kind of scares me. And in that way, machine learning and artificial intelligence kind of scares me, but you know what, if it's producing better results and you can still manage it and manage it for your clients, then probably a boon to your business rather than detracting from it.
Yeah, indeed. And it did seem like one of the areas that I can like look at what's going on and make like adjustments is on like location and stuff. So if you know there are favorable locations that do better, it'll tell you and you can go, oh, okay. Like I know that I'm tighter around this region. My conversions are better, bid adjust to that. Like if you know that from your other data, you could default it to that. You could go, okay, I've been running campaigns for ages. I know city centers do better, but I do okay in rural areas. Okay, I'm going to take my city centers, drop them in there and put bid adjusts on them. And it will take that sort of information in.
We got time for one more quick story. And speaking of where location's important, you know where it's if you got videos on your pages and you want them to perform better, you know where you ought to locate them?
Right down at the bottom, hidden under a cliff.
Yeah, something several feet below the fold, exactly. Oh, on their own page. Google's saying you want a video to perform, give it a dedicated page. That way we know it.
Now, I do think in part that's because they can't say put it on YouTube, but...
I would say back to them, hey, Google, it's a completely different file type. You know, like meme and video. Completely different file type. So you probably can tell the difference, but I guess for ease of giving advice, Google says put it on its own page.
Yeah, and one of the clarifications they do give, and it makes perfect sense. Like if I'm clicking through on a result that I know has a video or, clearly the video is the thing, put it up at the top. But one of the things that I find helpful in their clarification on this is just the way I've done it, but is showing that the description goes below. And the reason for that is there is a belief that, and it's a reinforced belief that content above the fold, i.e. content that is meant to be seen, is considered more valuable. In this case, we're looking not at the context that would be given by the text though, but actually the format of the content and going, if the user's intent is video, we need to reinforce that the intent of that page is met with a video. And then we can reinforce what that video is about in the content rather than reinforcing the content itself first and going, and we have a video about that. So I think that provides that clarity that some people might be a bit confused on. I know I have often put like a little blurb, 50 words up at the top and then a video and then the additional content. I might test changing that structure.
Well, one of the reasons I reacted almost humorously is Google advice Google gave a year and a half ago was throw a video on your product pages; it'll help you sell product.
Right.
So I had a client. I had a client who followed that advice, and they have like 5 or 6 videos on some of their product pages now, which is excellent but frustrating as hell sometimes. And we have gone around the clock. We've gone full circle. And Studio is saying another show is coming up directly after us here on WMR. So on behalf of Dave Davies from Beanstalk Internet Marketing, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. You folks have been listening to Webcology on WMR.fm on the 4th of November, 2021. Before we go, we'd like to remind you that COVID-19 is still a very real concern in our world. 750,000 Americans have now died of COVID-19 as of Wednesday, like yesterday. Get vaccinated. We can stop this thing. All we got to do is work together and set up a massive immune shield. Comes with vaccinations. Go out and do it. Save our community, save our economy. In the meantime, rank well, stay safe, be kind to each other, and we'll talk to you next week.
The opinions expressed in this WMR.FM program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of WMR.FM. Any rebroadcast, republication, or retransmission of this program without proper consent is prohibited.